welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. We are kind of having an episode because different stools. You're only as smart as the stool you're sitting on. Make them the right
nice.
Height. They're not far enough. Hey, now you made it. Now you made it yucky.
Yeah, I did.
What the heck? Yeah,
I did.
Bill. Can't take you anywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, so I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And that was Bill who said that earlier. I just want you to know I meant furniture. I was talking furniture.
Well, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape is located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, right off I-5. Go by and see him if you're looking for a tractor, a mower, any kind of an attachment. They got it all. They have a full service department. They can fix pretty much anything you have. Go by and see him or call him at 226-9226.
Can I fix this stool?
What?
Can I fix this stool?
No, I like this stool. It's got a lot of swivel to it.
So pretty much anything you have that looks like a tractor.
This is like a ride.
It is, too.
Yeah, so go by and see him or get him on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yep, there we go.
And you, let's see, use guys at home. What? Robert's telling me something. By Sovereign Minds, people.
The stool.
The stool. Everybody's coming and going. We're coming and going. It's a busy.
Lots going on.
It's a busy place here today.
Very busy place.
Show before us apparently played some clips out of a Board of Supervisors meeting that included some F-bombs and Ashley got to learn all about what happens when you push the button that blocks that out, because I guess if you do it a few times, then it stops the delay, and then you just get the F, and then you get the thing. And
it doesn't work.
So, you know, Ashley, before you take that really heavy medication, you know, we're going to be good this hour.
I appreciate it.
We're not going to probably
We probably won't drop any F-bombs.
We're probably not going to have any F-bombs, because we're not going to play any idiot little socialists.
Well, I don't know. William gets a little worked up, though.
Yeah, William gets worked up, but he's from Canada. They don't F-bomb.
No, that's
They're
true.
They're way too nice
that's
in Canada.
That's true.
Haven't you ever watched their police shows? They drive their drunks home.
They do.
We're like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? Yeah, they're like, come on, we know you just been drinking a little too much. Get in the car, you know, and I'm like, what?
Huh?
That was my best Canadian accent, by the way.
That sounded like a youper, but
yeah, they're never letting me in, but you're obviously foreign. Oh, my goodness. So, just in case you were curious, you could find everything about the show at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got archives that stretch back to like October-ish of 2010. Woo-hoo! We're coming up on a decade. Those archives actually are free of charge to listen to. They're all MP3 files with all the commercials cut out, so save you a little bit of time listening to it that way. We've got listeners all over the world, and thanks for that, listeners all over the world. Give you a little holleruski. I don't know who is in the lead. Last week, it was Singapore was in the lead in the entire world. Most listeners were in Singapore.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
God bless them.
What happened to
Nobody
our local
love the people
folks?
In Singapore?
Nobody local?
Well, we can't tell if they're local. You can only see the country.
Oh,
so you
okay.
can see the country. And so anyway, that's just always interesting to me to take a look and see who's accessing the website. So you can post this show to like your Facebook and all that kind of stuff just directly from the page. Today would be August the 30th, 2020. Yeah, I flipped a page last week, so now I'm 59 for real, not like the fake 59 because you're really 60, so you say you're 59. No, really 59, but it is kind of weird, like, ooh, creeping up on 60. That's kind of odd. It sounds so senior citizen-y, but see, like, they changed senior citizen
You'll
to
be
50,
all right.
55, so.
You'll be okay.
Yeah, I got Bill. He's older than I am all the time. I'm never catching up.
No, you're never
That's
catching
my goal,
up.
Never catching up. Okay, let's see. Oh, the United States is back in the lead. Oh, Nigeria's in second place. Singapore's in third. Well, isn't that odd? Hi, folks in Nigeria. I guess we should say hi to the people who are listening. So, anyway, today, you're going to actually get some facts. I know this is going to probably blow the narrative for pretty much everything we hear all the time, but the title of William Kay's articles, and there are three of them, and I've posted them, they are Black Lives Matter, the Ford Foundation, and the Black Movement Oligarchy. And there's a part one, a part two, and a part three.
Yeah.
And I posted those all for you. I'm in the process of switching those to PDF files if you're actually looking at it in real time. They are Word files at the moment, and some people don't have Word. So as a courtesy, I will be swiftly converting those to PDF for you and reposting. But I think it's about time we got some, you know, actual facts out here. It's fun, like his subtitle, I think it is, The Black Movement, Oligarchy, and the Tactical Riot is the first one. And then we have the Black Lives Matter, July 2013 to July 2020. And then the third part is the Ford Foundation and the Black Movement. So we have a lot to learn today. And I would say discuss, but mostly we're just going to learn. And William's going to educate us. So Mr. K comes from Canada. He lives in Canada, actually, in Alberta. And he used to be a radio guy until, but see, his website that I really like, that's kind of how we, quote, met. Environmentalism is Fascism is the title of his thing, and it's ecofascism.com. So ecofascism, since we know the anarchists aren't really good at spelling, and they write fascism a lot, but I've seen a variety of spellings. So ecofascism, spelled the correct way, .com, is his website. And he has really delved into the similarities between environmentalism and fascism, which is kind of how we got going. And then, anyway, he's got research on everything. We did a really good show with him like a month ago, maybe a little longer, on the rest home issue with the coronavirus and how the rest homes magically became so, I don't know.
Contaminated.
Yeah, there you go. I was going to say explosive, but, you know, why it took off so much in that. We've also done some previous shows on, population reduction, all sorts of stuff. He's a wealth of information and always does his homework. So I will actually post those links pretty swiftly here because I'm behind. I didn't put the last couple on, but they're on the page here for August 30th, 2020 at wethepeopleradio.us. So, Mr. K, we've got a few minutes until our first obligatory celebration of, what is it, free enterprise. We're not allowed to call it capitalism anymore because that's a communist word. So it's a free enterprise, and we're terribly sorry for calling it capitalism in the past. We retract that.
I don't.
Bill. Bill, you difficult. But you couldn't work the stool either, so what do you know?
Yeah, whatever.
You'll be happy in socialism. Nothing works there either. So, where would you like to start?
Me?
Yeah, you.
I'm on?
You?
Okay.
You're on, William. Thanks for joining us.
We've got William call me Bill, and we've got William call me William.
Well, it's kind of funny. You mentioned the F-bomb thing. I was hoping to use the F-bomb in the first paragraph here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ashley just seized up and fell off her chair.
Here's a skill testing question.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the NFAC, the Not F-Bomb Around Coalition?
No. Is there such a thing? Ashley just joined.
Neither of you?
Not F-Bomb
okay.
What? Not F-Bomb?
Can I actually use the word? Or NFAC stands for Not Effing Around Coalition.
Huh. Okay.
Are you familiar with that?
No, still not familiar with it.
Well, I encourage the millions out there, the Singaporeans and the Nigerians,
yes,
to Google NFAC and then put the word either Stone Mountain or Louisville beside it.
Really?
And you will get certain YouTubes, which if you're not familiar with this group, will absolutely blow your mind.
Oh.
It's a massive black militia along the East Coast.
Yeah, the first thing that pops up is NFAC militia.
Yeah, Google video that; it'll blow your mind.
Now, is that the same militia that shot one of their own people here not too long ago?
They're in their second rally in Louisville. One of their marksmen dropped a shotgun and shot three of their other members. Yeah,
right. Okay.
They're that good. But anyway, I want to start with
the M in
a
militia,
metaphor.
Huh?
I want to start with a metaphor.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Maybe.
Imagine you had a neighbor who was a loner. You never saw him doing much. But every now and then, in the middle of the night, you would hear this just screaming and throwing furniture. So you concluded the person was somewhat insane. Then you realize that the loner is not, in fact, living alone. That there are other people in that house. And what you're hearing is actually a physical fight going on. And then you conclude, well, he's not so crazy. He's just got issues with these roommates. That is how you understand the black movement. And I'm, by black movement, I'm not referring to Black Lives Matter. That is a subsidiary or one organization in a much larger social movement. But the movement itself is very deeply divided. There's the Ford Foundation crowd, the philanthropic crowd, and 2,000 little NGOs, large and small, you know, from the NAACP, you know, on down to various fringe groups.
Okay.
That's one section of the movement. There's another section of the movement which doesn't get any money, and that includes, there's three different Black Panthers. There's this new sort of monster militia on the East Coast called the NFAC. I just really encourage people to look at some of these videos, because this is, it's the largest militia in the States right now, and it seems to have come out of nowhere. But the operative word in the their name, the NFAC, is coalition. And they never really present exactly who is in this coalition. The only member organization that has come forward and said, we are part of this coalition, is another one of these groups is called the Black Riders Liberation Party. And you might want to visit their Facebook page. And once again, this is clearly a group that's on the extreme left. And they're, once again, heavily armed, all black groups, all black members, what have you. So in order to understand, you know, the black movement and the role that some of these philanthropies are playing, you really have to understand that this is a movement that is profoundly divided. And there is a section of this movement which appears to be going right off the rails right now. And Black Lives Matter is sort of straddling this. They are, on one hand, encouraging rioting, encouraging all sorts of direct action and militancy in the street sort of violence. But they are getting money from the elite groups, from the Ford Foundation, etc.
Yeah, that's, I think that's what a lot of folks are... concerned about is the funding and how large and how fast they're growing.
That's what we're going to have you detail for us. We're going to come right back, though. We actually do have to celebrate Free Enterprise here.
Yep.
We're 2 minutes late on our Free Enterprise, but you know what? It's still there. Thank goodness Communist Bill didn't kill it.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we'll be fixing the seating devices, a.k.a. stools and microphones. Be right back.
Your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body. Then they go, what shall we do about them?
So we might not be able to play that song anymore because apparently only a fraction of the people really died from the actual virus. I guess the CDC has split out the number of people who really died from the virus and the number of people who died with the virus. And it's what, like, what'd you say, Robert?
9,000.
Like 9,000 people or something. So go figure. Oh, 6%. Thanks, Ashley. Be my brains today. Yeah, only 6% of the people actually died from the virus. The other people died with the virus. Well, makes me happy. I've never worn a mask. Not that I could, but if I could, I'm glad I didn't. That makes no sense. But anyway, back to you. Back to you, William.
Okay.
I know, right? Really,
where were we?
Really, what else could you say?
Oh, we were talking about the splinter groups and the financing of the Black Lives Matter.
Well, let's talk about Black Lives Matter, okay?
Okay.
Now, what the key feature of it was sort of an offshoot of an existing movement. It wasn't as though this was a brand new thing. The core organizers and many of the rank and file people that participated in the mobilizations in Ferguson were already employees of the movement, or sort of part-time fringe employees of the movement. It wasn't something that came, you know, a whole cloth out of the new. It was viewed more like sort of a rebellion of the clerks. Within these little NGOs, you've got a lot of people who are struggling on movement wages, and you've got a lot of other people at the top who are making over $1 million a year. And this was a rebellion of the clerks, of a lot of the people who had these jobs working at various black movement NGOs. They went off on their own. They started organizing these rides to Ferguson. Turned into a big riot. A lot of the people who had driven or went on these caravans to Ferguson, when they returned, and this is 2013, when they returned, they started forming Black Lives Matter chapter.
Hey.
Then, you know, the leaders of the black movement, you know, the Ford Foundation crowd, etc., they moved in to fully co-opt this. And in that process, there was a major split. And three or four of the Black Lives Matter chapters, the one in New York, the one in Cincinnati, and a few others, they split off. And they weren't going to get any funding from the Ford Foundation because they were too radical. And it's not just the Ford Foundation, but I'm guessing the Ford Foundation, in terms of money coming down from philanthropists to the black movement, they're over 50% of it in the United States. They were giving well over $100 million a year to the black movement before Ferguson and before George Floyd. And they've ramped that up considerably since then. But there's a bunch of other philanthropies that do give some money, and more are piling on now. They're running something of a protection racket, you know, sort of good cop, bad cop sort of thing. There's the good black movement and there's the bad black movement. And the Ford Foundation's pitch has always been, as with Jesse Jackson and the other guys, you know, if you don't give money to us, these bad black radicals are going to take the center stage. Hmm. And they've been sort of playing that game for some time.
But there doesn't seem to be any cohesion there. I mean, it doesn't matter if you, I mean, look at the politicians that have supported this movement. Now they're being attacked. So it doesn't really seem to matter, does it? Whether you support them or not, they're going after everybody.
They are very divided. There is, like, within the movement, sections, you know, they're implacable. You are not going to buy these people out. If you give them money, they're going to buy weapons with it. They are that far down the road.
Sure.
And that applies to their allies within the anarchist movement. These are genuine revolutionaries that are really bent on that NFC coalition. They are quasi-black nationalists. They are explicitly talking about breaking off chunks of America and creating black homelands.
Hmm.
And they're marching now in groups of 500, 700 fully armed. And that is their line. I don't know how, there's really a lot of radical leftists in there, but it's hard to separate them out from just flat-out black racist groups. Like the Black Panthers, there's multiple Black Panthers, some of which are just, you know, there's no mention of anything other than sort of basically racial hatred. So there's a division, again, within that movement. But there's also this radical left in there, and they are heavily armed.
So what part of the movement is behind the rioting and the looting and... In some of these major cities now, like Portland?
What the Ford Foundation and the official Black Lives Movement crowd want, they want little boutique riots, right? they want their employees to go out there and block a highway, distribute some liquor, you know, rocks and what have you, and have a little sort of, you know, blowout enough to make the news, etc. But they are sort of unleashing something, because other groups are coming into this now, and they have a far more radical agenda, and they're also capable of far greater violence. So it's a bit of a Frankenstein's monster effect is taking over. Whereas the big money, the Ford Foundation, and the people that are sort of connected with the philanthropic circles around in New York, yeah, they want these little boutique riots. They want mayhem running up to the election so that Trump looks bad, etc. But this has already gone so far past what they had planned.
Oh, sure.
There's another, you know, the looting is becoming increasingly organized. And one starts to wonder if they are not systematically marshaling resources through the looting. It's quite possible there's still, you know, 101 petty acts of violence and all the money is going into liquor and drugs. But there's another possibility that, like, certainly there was an event in Chicago about a month ago, where it was so obviously a sham. Like they distributed this information on social media that someone had been shot. It was a lie. And then 100 stores got looted. There, you know, umpteen stores got looted. And people underestimate how lucrative a crime that can be. Now, a lot of these stores have got, you know, $500,000 in merchandise sitting in them. So if, there's a possibility that some of these groups, and I've uncovered about a dozen groups that I think are like genuinely over-the-top armed revolutionary groups that are getting involved in this looting process. And these groups like Black, the Riders Liberation Party and the Revolutionary Black Panther, these are poor groups. Most of their members are on welfare. Most of their members have menial jobs or they're students and what have you. They do not have any resources. And the elites within the black movement make sure those groups don't get any resources. What you saw in New York, you know, the New York chapter of the Black Lives Matter was the biggest, but they have been completely cut off and excluded from the money for sure. So they've created a new group called Black Ops. And once again, if you look at their website, these are radical groups. These are the ones that are marching, you know, kill the cops sort of thing. They're out there. And of course, the Ford Foundation doesn't want anything to do with that. They don't want anything to do with the civil or criminal liabilities that encounter with giving monies to groups which are, you know, burning buildings down. So what they want are like a little bit of mayhem, a little bit of rioting, but there's this other movement that's moving out, or a sub-movement that's moving into that and taking advantage of that. And that is why it is getting so dangerous.
And how do they, the general public looks at this and they see the looting and the violence and the shootings and they see Black Lives Matter. They don't see these subgroups, so they're getting labeled as the folks responsible for this. How does outfits like the Ford Foundation distance themselves from that?
Through intermediaries and through flow-throughs primarily. And this was a tactic that was developed by the environmental movement on the West Coast. You recall there was the Ruckus Society and there was Earth First, and a lot of these terrorist groups, they used to be the main terrorist body in the United States, were these Ofra Green groups. But there was a very calculated way where they would be double arm's length. Like, you know, the big foundations would give money to groups, they would give money to groups, they would trickle money to groups. So they were financed. You got people like Dave Foreman and that, they were flat out terrorists, multiple bombings to his record. Now he practically runs the National Wildlife Federation. He's now backing with Big Green again. So they practice this art. You saw they were also with the Native movement in Canada. You know, I know some of these people personally, like the Bronx and that. They were putting money to that. But, you know, they're very careful. They do not, under any circumstances, want the civil liabilities that attach to doing what you're doing, like destroying people's businesses
right.
and burning buildings down. Yeah, you know, you can get sued for that, right?
Well,
so they're very careful of making this a sort of a double arm's length thing.
It's kind of interesting, though, that, you know, initially in the introduction, it's like, well, I guess we should tell people that, you know, you started in the green movement, but now we're going to veer into another lane. It's like, oh, no, we're not. We're just going to expand that. I totally forgot that.
Yeah.
I guess we can't distance ourselves either from the stupid animal rights people, because when you're too crazy for the environmental movement, you now move to animal rights. So apparently now you got options. If you're too crazy for the environmental movement, you move into the fake Black Lives, whatever your thing is, whatever zone of that. Or you can go to the animal rights. You've got choices now. Maybe you have allergies.
I'm really,
you know, maybe like
that.
Me, if I get extreme, I can go. I can burn stuff down rather than hang out with animals. Oh, my God. We have to take a really quick break so I can take my medication. We'll be right back. You are listening to We the People. Please join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Throw some bricks.
Yeah.
A frozen water bottle.
Umbrellas.
Oh, umbrellas. The new weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the Beatles Revolution, did they have umbrellas? Probably not.
No, I don't think they had leaf blowers either.
Oh, yeah, that's leaf blowers. I forgot about that. They're using leaf blowers.
Yeah. Oh,
Lord.
Yeah.
All right, sorry. Back to where we were, William.
Yes, back.
Before we diverged into silliness again.
Okay, one point, and then we're going to hopefully get back to the chronology.
Oh, sorry. Bill, it's your fault.
That one of the key figures in Black Lives Movement, when they were fully co-opted again by the big philanthropies, by the Ford Foundation, was that Kaylee Scales. And she was sort of a lifelong Democratic Party fundraiser. She's black, but, you know, she knows the Swedish royal family. And, you know, she's clearly she's married to a very wealthy white man as well, as are a lot of these black oligarchic leaders. They're almost all married white if they're not gay. But she, unbeknownst to me, she's just been fired recently. She was the leader of the official Black Lives Matter Global Fund. And preparing for the show today, I went to their website, and she is now gone. She is now the former one. And they've replaced her with Patrice Couleurs. And that appears to be a shift towards the street again. Because Kaylee Scales was clearly a global elite type, although she was black. And she's been replaced by Patrice Couleurs, who's far more, you know, up through the rank and file, a Black Lives Matter activist sort of thing. So I think that's a shift towards radicalism again. Something clearly happened there. There was a palace coup within BLM, and it shifted apparently far more to the street again. So I think we're in. This must have happened just in the last couple of weeks. So I think we're in for even more fireworks with that change. But back to the sort of the basic chronology. So BLM was around for 4 or 5 years, but gradually shrinking under the management of Kaylee Scales and the Ford Foundation, et cetera. It was actually shrinking. The number of chapters were getting smaller, and their activities were less volatile. And that suddenly changed, and this was obviously orchestrated on May the 20th. And I specifically recall the sequence of events. Around May 20th, they fire up the Breonna Taylor complaint. She was the one killed in the no-knock warrant.
Mm-hmm.
But that had happened some time before. And they were dormant. This whole COVID thing was going on. And then suddenly they fired up that campaign again. They're in the streets, causing disturbances. And then we have the George Floyd. And then, of course, all heck broke loose then. But it speaks to how social movements harvest grievances. You know, yes, there is police brutality in America. Yes, there are wrongful police shootings in America. That is not something new. And yes, blacks have historically faced discrimination and prejudice at the hands of law enforcement and the criminal justice system. These are not new things. But it's sort of like air pollution. Air pollution, urban air pollution, is not a new thing. A medieval city was a very smoky, dusty place. Air pollution is, in fact, an old problem that is getting better and better. The same applies to the treatment of African Americans by the criminal justice system. It has always been a problem. And as a matter of fact, it's been improving. It's not nearly as bad as it was, say, 40 years ago in the Deep South. So, yes, there is a grievance there. But let us not pretend that this is something that just happened 5 years ago and it's suddenly getting worse and worse. Right now in the USA, you can pretty well predict that there's going to be about 200 blacks killed by the police every year. Between now and the election, there's going to be 40 more blacks killed by the police just in the normal grind. Far more whites get killed by the police, but it is true that blacks are disproportionately represented in that group. They never really factor in sort of economic circumstances and things like that, which would really change the dynamic. But this is the way social movements operate. They can guarantee that there are going to be some pretty sketchy shootings of blacks occurring on a fairly regular basis. So every time it happens, they're going to go berserk. And that's why this is becoming increasingly dangerous. You can guarantee, just with this Jacob Blake person, and others. This is going to happen like on a steady basis. There's going to be a drumbeat. There's going to be one in a couple of weeks. There's going to be one a week after that. So this is escalating. But it's not as though, again, this is how social movements want to be. You harvest a grievance. It's a pre-existing phenomenon, and you've decided to make some hay out of it. And particularly the sort of the big money within the black movement, they know how to use these protests and what have you to pressure other philanthropies for more money, to pressure governments for more money, to pressure philanthropies and universities to hire more blacks. That's what they have in mind. The elite of the black movement aren't interested in eliminating privilege. They're interested in getting privilege unto themselves. So that phenomenon is going on alongside you have this sort of authentic far-left or far-race, black-racist movement that are also moving into the same area. And what you saw, what I tried to point out in these essays is that the elite, you know, the Ford Foundation crowd, which is a black-dominated group, six of the trustees are black, they can step on the gas whenever they want. It's simply a matter of them giving a lot more money to groups that they know are going to agitate and propagate around certain issues. And it seems to me fairly obviously that May the 20th was the run-up to the U.S. election. And they, because they are one and all Democratic Party supporters, they had a plan that they were going to ramp this up. You know, it wasn't as though we got to sit around. Actually, they didn't. They started reviving the Breonna Taylor one, and then they were blessed with the George Floyd situation. But they knew that they could predict that there's going to be a number of black shootings of blacks, and that they can now pump a lot of money into this, and they can escalate things a lot. So there's that's part of the picture, that they were ramping this up in preparation for the U.S. election. And it's working fairly well, but I can't help but believe that it is getting away from them, that there are aspects of this that really smart people in New York did not anticipate, and that they have to some degree lost control of the situation. They really weren't anticipating it. The Pacific Northwest anarchist movement is an authentic phenomenon. It has an agency unto itself. I don't think they were really predicting that those people would embrace the cause the way that they do. And I'm sure half the fires that are being set during these riots are being set by a handful of people from the Pacific Northwest anarchist community are doing it. And that really isn't something I think that the trustees of the Ford Foundation factored in at all. Now, this is becoming a lot more violent, especially in places like Seattle and Portland. And I lived in British Columbia for a long time, lower mainland. I was, you know, intermittently interacting with all manner of people, including the radical left and the anarchist community. And I know that's a huge movement in the Pacific Northwest. You know, they're wacky, they're anti-industrial, they're, you know, primitivist, what have you. But they are, you know, in large numbers, and they are true believers. And they have picked up the action quite a bit, too. It's a, you see it a lot. And back to the point about, you know, the environmental movement, the most recent videos I saw out of Portland where they're occupying Wheeler's condo building, you know, that looks so obviously like an old environmental movement. They're all white. They were chaining themselves up. All of the stunts and tactics were just stereotypically sort of far eco-terrorist sort
of thing. It was indoor earth
first.
There's
not a black person there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so, but isn't it funny, though?
Your point of view, they're sort of shifting from one movement to another. Yeah, I'm seeing that. Like, a lot of these people, if this wasn't going on, they would be, you know, tying themselves to trees or, you know, tying themselves to bulldozers. They would be doing that. Now they are being shifted to another thing. Like, they can be moved around like toy soldiers, these people. So I'm seeing that a lot as well. But never underestimate that there is, in fact, you know, authentic movements out there, and there are authentic grievances out there. They can be harvested and manipulated and directed, but it's a huge mistake to say, well, there was no grievance here at all. No, there's a lot of people who are really suffering, and, you know, housing issues and poverty and things like that. These, too, can be harvested.
Well, isn't it interesting, though, that these guys, they want to do something. I mean, they're just going to do something, so they latch on to whatever flies by, and as long as the media makes sure that, well, like George Floyd apparently died from a fentanyl overdose. Huh, surprise, surprise. But we find that out months later. You know, the other guy had a big criminal record, the guy in Wisconsin. There's always a ton more information that comes out later, but the media makes sure to pump up the go ahead and light the fire story, and then you get the, you know, the people that are upset, the, you know, holding candles and walking down the street, they come as the prelude, mm-hmm. and the other guys are right behind him. I mean, it's, you don't even have to, you could plan for it.
Oh, yeah, it's the same sequence of events. I mean, you get the blast off right after it happens, the looting, the rioting, the mayhem, and then during the day you get the peaceful protest.
It just placeholds. It placeholds until, you know, because who was it that said, you know, you never hold a peaceful protest at night?
Well, yeah, that was one of the comments I heard the other day. Was
typically you start in the evening, and then as night falls,
right.
The other groups do. But yeah, they're clearly evidence in some of the Black Lives Matter protests. They're distributing alcohol.
Sure.
I mean, you get a bunch of people. Hey, Black Lives Matter. A lot of these black movement organizations, they go into poor neighborhoods. A lot of them do work with juvenile delinquents and other people caught up in the criminal justice system. So these people are on first name basis with hundreds of local people who have, you know, histories of criminal activity against property and what have you. So it's nothing for them to get a few hundred of these people at one location. And then, yeah, sure, and distribute the whiskey bottles and the rocks and what have you. Guaranteed you're going to have a riot.
Oh, sure.
And what you saw in fact, it would be like part of the anarchist cookbook. I mean, you know, just the booze up and riot technique. They give you little details of exactly how to do this. It's not rocket science, okay? Get a few hundred angry people together, you know, the whiskey, the rocks, and away you go, right?
It's worked for the Irish since the beginning of time. And that was like the hallmark of our clan. I think our little shield from way back has got a little rock on it.
The Irish would have taken over the world, so we'd be lucky.
I heard somebody say the other day that, you know, Martin Luther King never held a protest at night. And that's
exactly
that's where the trouble starts.
All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
On the day I was born, the nurses all gathered round, and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, said, "Leave this one alone." She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad, bad. Bad to the bone.
All my wolves begin to howl. Wake me up, the time is now. Can you hear the drumming? There's a revolution coming.
Wide awake, the fever burns. Sweat it out.
But spoiler alert, we hope not. Okay. We're just playing the song because it has the right words in it, not because we want it to happen.
Hey, 2 points I forgot to mention.
Oh, dear.
Or I glossed over. I mentioned that there was this dispute between the official Black Lives Matter and their New York chapter. During that, there was an interesting interview with this, I think his name is Hawk Newson or something. He's the sort of head honcho of the radical Black Lives New York chapter that got booted out, which is now called Black Ops. But he made this comment that, you know, a lot of the employees of the black nonprofit societies show up at his rallies wearing masks. And there's a possibility that, you know, they could be, you know, another aspect of them losing control of it. I estimate there's probably 2,500, 3,000 blacks that are employed by nonprofit societies within the black movement. And these people, of course, would lose their jobs if they were ever seen, you know, at an NFAC event or at any one of these radical events. But a lot of them are going. And it's back to this revolt of the clerk thing. Like, I'm not so sure that the Ford Foundation trustees have really got the reins on this anymore, and that they're giving money to NGOs that are, in fact, supporting the far more extremist elements within the movement. A second point, I mentioned that May 2020 was this dividing point where BLM went from going smaller and smaller and tamer and tamer, and suddenly they stepped on the gas and they became far more militant again. At that time, they shifted their street demonstrations from the perimeters of cities. They were blocking some highways or doing stuff like that. They shifted it to right downtown where the retail districts were. And, of course, that was a go for the looting and what have you.
Sure.
So that was also part of the shift. But there was a clear, like something happened. Like some there was a preordained plan to really ratchet things up rapidly at May 2020. And it's clearly, you know, there's a crazy game of chicken going on down south of the border. You know, Trump's now going to go to Kenosha. Like, who is going to inflame this the most? Initially, it was pretty obviously that the Democratic Party were encouraging and motivating the rioters and the looters, what have you, up to a certain point. But now, Trump supporters and that, they're also now engaging in these provocations. And we're 2 months from the election. And I'm genuinely concerned that this may be the last election you guys are going to have.
Yeah, I think
keep escalating like this.
No, it is. It's escalating. And I kind of feel the same way. It's we've never had this much of a sustained rioting in our country. Although during the Vietnam War there was a lot of protests there, but it wasn't this looting and violent
clashes. Destruction.
Yeah, with the police. I mean, this is ramping up, and I think you're absolutely right. As more people are killed, it's more fuel for the fire, and I don't know what's gonna calm this thing down. I don't think anybody going to a city and having a talk is gonna do it. I think you've got major sports now playing a role in this, and I really think they're kind of fueling it. With Black Lives Matter has their own anthem. They're gonna play that. I mean, there's so many little hints they're giving the green light to this anarchy.
Destabilization.
Yep.
You know, it's to some degree, you know, I hate to say it, but chickens coming home to roost, because this is something that the American government, as you well know, has done to other societies, like this sort of other countries, this sort of destabilization tactic. Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm seeing. I mean, the fact that they're going to do this mail-in ballot, and it's looking like it's going to be this nasty contested election in the first place, while at the same time you've got this ever-growing, you know, basically, what's morphing into a race war, except in the Pacific Northwest, there's little white anarchist and Antifa types that are really showing some initiative there. But it's a highly unstable situation to begin with. And then you're going to have a guaranteed blowout for an election. They're not going to be able to pick a winner on election night. And there's going to be this, you know, it's going to be back, you know, Gore and Bush thing where months of counting pregnant chads and what have you in the thing. That's going to happen.
Oh, sure.
So you're going to have this nasty, protracted litigation, you know, back to the Supreme Court again and again sort of thing to determine election while this stuff keeps escalating. Mm-hmm. And that's, you talk about what's not appearing on the mass media. What's not appearing in the mass media is this NFAC coalition, those groups, crickets in the mass media. I mean, they're afraid to talk about those groups because it will only help them recruit. But that's a major factor, and there's probably 20 cities. Now, you guys are lucky. You are west of the Mississippi. There's now 20 cities east of the Mississippi that have black majorities, and some of them it's like 80%. If this really starts going sideways, I can see whole cities going right out of control. You had that autonomous zone in Seattle briefly.
Yeah.
Multiply that by 1,000. That's what your future is looking like. And really, I don't really see a way out of this. I firmly believe that some of your allies are behind this, that are promoting this, the Europeans. You have enemies out there that you don't even know, that would love to see, you know, America crash and burn. And I think they are fomenting this ways in ways that, in which that, you know, we're never going to be able to determine, you know, 40 years from now, historians will prove it beyond a doubt. But there are foreign powers, and it might not be the ones you suspect. I watch RT regularly, Russian television radio, and they are definitely trying to foment this, like, unmistakably. They are putting out a lot of sort of race hatred stuff. To read their comment column, it reads like 8chan now. It's just this relentless, vulgar, racist attacks, and they're letting this go, and they're running story after story that is doing nothing to foment it. But RT is a minor player. There are other forces at work and other countries at work. They're having a lot more influence on American society, and it looks to me like a sort of a destabilization plan, but, you know, never presume a conspiracy for anything which sheer stupidity might explain. And I'm seeing a lot of that as well, too. I mean, you have the black oligarchy. They're shoveling money at this, but, you know, this is the same old game they've been playing for a while. But I don't think these guys are that smart, and I don't think that they're in control of this situation. What I'm seeing there now, this is really dangerous. Once again, to Bill's point, this has not happened before. They've had some nasty rides in the past, but this is far more sustained, and the protest movement is far, far more heavily armed than ever before.
Yeah, see, that's the one element we've never had in this country before, short of the Civil War, is armed militias gearing up for, you know, that moment. And I unfortunately think it's going to happen. Something's gonna spark it, and you have all these people that are geared up, trained, ready to go. And we've never had that. I mean, we've had riots in the streets. We've had a lot of that in the past, but not like this. Not like this.
Well, and this is,
and the population is bigger.
Yeah, that's true.
One thing I warn Americans about is avoid the sort of a knee jerk reaction to crush the protesters. Like, everyone's after Wheeler, you know, why don't you just round them all up? Be warned, there's a group out of Puget Sound called the John Brown Gun Club.
Oh, yeah.
And they are systematically arming Antifa and the anarchists of the North, the Pacific Northwest. So you think, oh, okay, we're just going to stomp on these guys. In a bat of an eyelash, you don't have 200 or 300 people with umbrellas and silly string. You've got 200 or 300 people with assault rifles.
Right.
In a bat of an eyelash, that could happen. And you are then going to lose control of large parts of these cities. So be wary about, you know, a knee-jerk, heavy-handed response to this. It might completely backfire. And, you know, there's sort of a mentality you get when you sort of go through some of the sort of the right-wing militias, that somehow you have to be a fat, bearded white guy to shoot a rifle, you know?
Exactly.
Not so. And,
not that we have anything against fat, bearded white guys. We've got to drop off here for the news break. You are listening to WeThePeopleRadio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio on August the 30th, 2020. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor, this hour is Pape Machinery. And Pape Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. All things tractors and mowers and service and parts, they got it all going on down there. Give them a call, 226-9226, or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Dun-da-da.
There you go.
Okay, so, swiftly, you can always find us at wethepeopleradio.us. You can listen live during the show if, for some reason, you don't catch us on the local radio station here at KCNR. You could listen later in the afternoon because Robert always cuts out our free enterprise moments there, a.k.a. commercials, and makes the show just a little bit shorter for you. Sometimes tidies up things that we've fumbled, say, perhaps, maybe Sort of.
Well, yeah, kind of.
He's like the little guy. All of us that are old, we remember the fractured fairy tales. Remember the guy in the back that had the little broom, you know?
Sweep, sweep, sweep. Sweep, sweep.
That's Robert. Maybe you can include that in the video for people that are watching it on video. They can be reintroduced to Fractured Fairy Tales. True crowd pleaser. Let's see. That's it. So that's at WeThePeopleRadio.us. And during the break, I chatted with our guest, William Kay, on the real telephone instead of on the air. I do love to put people on the spot, but, you know, it is kind of rude. So I asked him if he would be willing to come on next week as well because, well, let's face it, we've barely started his entire topic.
Anything can happen in a week.
That's exactly what he said.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he said.
It's true. We were talking about, you know, the possibility of things just totally going sideways with armed groups and whatnot in this country. We had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with a family member who is ex-Green Beret.
You're never an ex-Green Beret.
Well, you're never an ex, yeah. I'd probably get smacked for saying that.
What is it, not a practicing Green Beret?
Not active Green Beret. but he is still connected with the security industry in this country. And we were talking about the same topic. And one thing he said that really kind of rang home was, you have to realize that in this country, there are thousands of retired special forces folks out there. They are watching this as well. And they are all connected. They all keep in touch. They all have connections in the security industry. And if things really got bad, he said, they will mobilize because they took an oath. And those are the kind of folks that are going to – it's going to be a game changer. If that is unleashed on the American people, it will be a revolution because they don't mess
but
around.
Are they coordinated? Are they of one mind politically?
Well, many of them are.
According to him,
they are. A lot of them. They don't want this country to go socialism. And that's where they're all of like mind. This is not a socialistic society. We're a free nation. And that's...
I don't for a second think the Democratic Party is socialist. Like Joe Biden and these people. I mean, you can call them commie all you want. That's why I encourage people to look at things like, you know, the Revolutionary Black Panthers. There is a communist movement in the United States.
Oh, sure.
Hitherto, it has been very marginalized. But, you know, you're blowing it if you start calling Joe Biden a communist or the Democratic Party a communist. They are not. There is a fringe out there that is quite estranged from the Democratic Party that actually is an armed revolutionary group, armed revolutionary organization.
Can we just call them commie lovers?
Trump got elected, everybody's... What's that?
Can we just call them commie lovers?
No, Biden and these guys, they were anti-communist war hawks all through the Cold War. They were not at all involved in the communist movement
at all, okay? That's true.
It's like when Trump got elected, everybody's running around, oh, he's a Nazi, blah, blah, blah. No, he wasn't. There's no connection between him and the Nazi movement whatsoever.
No.
So there's a danger of hyperbole and start calling people names that they really aren't. And the worst part of it is you lose sight of the fact that there is actually American Nazis that are armed and what have you. They're out there. They're fringe. They're marginalized. I strongly suspect they're heavily infiltrating these Trump 2020 groups. That's part of the danger. You know, by and large, I don't think the people that go to Trump 2020 rallies are with sort of the racist right fringe, but they're there. They're there. They're recruiting.
Well, you always have. Let's face it. If you look at the political spectrum, it's easy to look left and right, but we all know that the real spectrum is a circle. And if you go far enough right, you wind up on the left. You go far enough left, same thing. They all kind of wind up in the crazy zone. So, but that's not. Thank goodness, it's not the majority of people. However, I think you're right. You got to watch it that you're not actually helping them by refusing to admit they might be there or saying the other guys are all crazy. They're just wrong.
I'm saying part of the, I think the Trump strategy was to try to red bait the Democrats again and try to portray them in a certain color. I don't think a lot of people are going to buy that. If you really look at the core Democratic Party, these are very wealthy people. They have no interest in any sort of revolutionary socialist agenda that's going to expropriate their assets at all. It's just an epithet. It's just an insult that people are hurling at them
except they're paying
the waters
for it
and confusing the situation.
But see, the thing we see from here is that they're paying for it. You look at these. Well, look at guys like not money involved, but power involved. Look at the mayor there in Portland. He supports these guys all the time. You know, oh, they're just peaceful protesters. He goes down there and gets, they slug him or shove him down or scare him or chase him around. Now that it is
his front door.
Yeah, it is front door. And so, you know,
he's enabling them. He's enabling the Democrats.
Yeah.
Remember, again, my theory was the strategy was to ramp up this stuff in the prelude to the election, and they say Trump is this, Trump equals mayhem, what have you. He's actually seems to be calling their bluff on it now.
Yeah.
Like just at the time when the Democrats are starting to step away from this thing, like what have we done? Trump seems to be charging into this.
Because guys like the mayor that have totally supported them are now looking at it going, uh-oh. Now they're trying to, they want to recall him. Now they want to recall him, and I thought, he was their guy. Like he has helped them have what 60 something days of riots, and now they want to recall him. I'm thinking.
Well, I'm looking at the policies these folks want to enact. I mean, a lot of socialism, and the Democrats are behind it. I mean, they're all for it. They want to have free
everything.
I have
a different definition of socialism. I have a traditional definition of socialism, which would mean, you know, that the banks would be public property. Originally, socialism was all about economics. It was all about people who wanted the government to control the banking sector, the government to control the commanding heights of the economy. You don't hear any of that from the Democrats. They're corporatists. Yeah, they're opposed to capitalism for sure. But they have a vision of a society where, you know, believe me, that the assets of the ultra-rich, they are not going to be touched. And, you know, they don't believe in competition. They want to cartelize all aspects of the economy. They want a land of 100,000 regulations of sort of cementing down the society, but they do not, under any circumstance, want to expropriate the assets of the big money. In my mind, you got to make that distinction. And it's inappropriate to call the Democrats socialists. They're actually a form of what they used to call social fascism or corporatism. But they are a universe apart from the really radical far left, which is pretty much marginalized and hitherto marginalized and subordinated. But what we're seeing now is, go ahead.
Well, I'm just looking at their platform. I'm looking at Bernie Sanders. A lot of what he stood for is flat out socialism, and I think Biden's taken a lot of his leads from that group. I mean, I don't think we can deny that. And maybe that's where they're losing control. But his handlers, I think Bernie Sanders is a major player there.
Debatable. I mean, that's certainly what the Republicans are trying to put out that match. It's almost really don't want to run against Biden and Harris. They want to run against AOC and Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
But I view them, certainly they've got a following within the Democratic Party, and Biden is never, pre-election, he's not going to explicitly denounce them, but how many times did the Democratic Party burn Bernie? I mean, they did
Every time.
Yeah.
But they're definitely
there's a
getting
left faction in the Democratic Party. There's an authentic left faction there.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to get out the votes, you know, you really got to appeal to the working class. Yeah, they're a huge portion of the population, and they have pocketbook issues. And you might, like, I live in Canada, right? We got Medicare here. It's not socialist at all. The doctors are private practitioners, and they just bill the government. There's a lot of problems with it, but it's not the end of the world. It wouldn't be the end of America as well. And a lot of the other BS that AOC and Bernie Sanders support, they support a libertarian immigration policy. Like, just open the borders, let
it
rip.
Right.
That's what that's about. You know, the American working class isn't, you know, cheering that on. And also all this green crap, that is, you know, that's that's basically eco-fascist. I mean, it's bonkers that America would be considering any other fuel source other than coal, uranium, or natural gas. You know, that they're going to go to, that's, where's the socialism there? That's just, it's a completely alien thing that the Europeans are imposing on the Americans.
Right.
So a lot of what they come up with, some of it's leftist, no doubt about it. They've got to appeal to the people where they're at, and there's a lot of people hurting. They never really get to the real issues like housing and stuff like that, or other issues like that. No, they're bogus. These are sort of bogus leftists. The real left is utterly marginalized in America. And what you've got are these corporatists, these social fascists, these people masquerading as leftists, that are playing a role there. But I think you're missing the ball by a foot and a half if you're calling Joe Biden a communist.
No, I know he's not a communist.
He actually has dementia, so I don't think you could be a.
I don't think he knows what he is.
Be a socialist and have dementia. on that happy note,
not capable of any coherent ideology.
I was just going to say, I don't think he's going to be the leader of the band. I'm not sure he can do the. They would give him the little.
Whole element around him, like, you know, the Clintons, these people.
Yeah,
you know, this is the New York City banking community. These are not leftists at all.
True.
You know, they are going to grind the working class into filth.
We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And I just want you to know, Bill's been very annoying telling me when it's break time.
Keep us on track. It's my job.
All right, hit it, Ashley.
All right. Ashley, hit it.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
All around me are familiar faces.
Directly from Joe Biden's basement. I wrecked a perfectly good song.
Yeah, you did.
Sorry about that. So, we were having a little debate during the brief Free Enterprise moment there about the, you know, that these guys aren't really socialists. And you're totally right. They really want national control. They want the government to be in charge of everything as long as they're the government. So I'm not sure if that's a modified national control or if that's what everyone who wants national control thinks.
Oh, you're hitting the nail on the head. What I'm seeing time and time again is a lot of people, particularly, you know, sort of the American, you know, I don't like to use any of these words, conservative, liberal. They're almost all meaningless right now. But they're worried about this sort of communist takeover. What they are seeing is there is an authoritarian state emerging. A bureaucratic authoritarian state is emerging, and that state is not going to give a damn what the American people think about anything. It's going to ram through a whole bunch of policies, and they don't care if you don't like it, because they are, at their hearts, fascists. And a true fascist believes that the common people are too stupid to even be consulted about things like economic policy and foreign policy. The authorities are going to determine these things, and the authorities are going to try to explain it to the people, but they really don't have to, because, you know, their opinion really doesn't matter. And I think a lot of Americans are seeing this happen, that they're completely losing control of the government. The government's getting larger and more powerful, and it's utterly unresponsive to them.
Well, the one piece of this that we shouldn't gloss over, because something that happens down here and something I hear a lot from people is that we need term limits. And this is a total pet peeve of mine. We need term limits. And it's like, okay, let's think that through. Because with term limits, the only thing you have limited is your vote. You now don't get to have whoever you want representing you. You now get the bureaucracy of the executive branch, who's there for 30-plus years with no term limit, to run everything because your elected officials don't know enough or have enough longevity to be good at it, to represent you. If you don't have anybody good running, you elect the guy that's already there. That happens a lot.
That is a valid point. It's a good argument for term limits for bureaucrats.
Exactly.
But I'm a supporter of term limits for politicians, because if you don't do that, the incumbent ultimately is going to start winning every election.
Everybody's in favor of term limits for people that are not in their district. Yeah. Like, we hear it a lot up here in Northern California. We want term limits because we want to get rid of Nancy Pelosi. I'm like, oh, are you moving to San Francisco? No. Oh, okay. So who's going to elect her replacement? Oh, yeah, the same people who elected her. Maxine Waters. She's in by 80% every year. It's like, the people you really have to look at, the folks that are blowing it, are not the politicians who are getting reelected. They're not voting for themselves, except for maybe one vote or two on a good day. But you're looking at the electorate. It's the electorate that is the problem. They're not doing their homework. They're not promoting good people. People say everybody in office is a shyster and a loser and a crook and a user and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's nice. So then you look at somebody and you say, hey, you should run for office. What's the first thought? Oh, I want to be one of those. I want to be maligned and thought to be a bad person, right? So we shoot ourselves in the foot all different directions. Oh, we need term limits. Everybody who's in office is bad. And
we need good people in office.
And we need good people in office. It's like, who's psychotic now?
The reality is that you're stuck in a two-party system.
Yeah,
it's a dreadful thing. What you're seeing in a lot of the U.S. Northeast, we part of the left, that's basically a one-party state now, where one party is just winning again and again. Like, the Democratic Party has won the mayoralty of Boston now for 120 years. That's the real danger. Somehow or other, you have to break out of this two-party system. It just costs so much money to get involved in politics. You can say, okay, you should run for office, but look at how much money you have to have. And look what happens to anybody who steps out of the two-party system. Like, you don't exist.
Oh, you get slaughtered.
I'm really seeing this in Canada as well. Even just trying to post anything on the internet, trying to get people to post your writings. You know, if you're not with one of the parties, if you're not really promoting their agenda, you know, putting out their talking points to the T, they're not interested in that.
Huh. Bernie Sanders.
There's very little. What's that?
Yeah,
like Bernie Sanders. He got nowhere until he switched to Democratic Party, and then he started getting some traction. But he still gets
waxed by them all the time.
Yeah, he still gets waxed.
The thing that's tricky is if you look at it, look at California. Here's a good number for you. In California, 1 million Republicans did not vote in the election where Gavin Newsom won as the governor. Well, so for all the people who gripe about
Gavin... These are registered Republicans.
Correct. So they didn't vote because, why? Oh, yes, the other thing we like to tell ourselves all the time, to our detriment, our vote doesn't matter. Well, apparently it did matter in that election because he didn't win by 1 million votes. So that's not to say all Republicans would have voted for a Republican. I mean, I realize that. There's no all, there's no never. However, you had 1 million Republicans registered to vote who did not cast a ballot, and Gavin Newsom wins by less than 1 million. Well...
We also got a herd of rhino politicians down there, too. I mean, a lot of times it really doesn't matter.
It depends.
You seem to be getting the same policies. It does sometimes, but certainly in Canada, we're at a point now where basically one-party state. There's two parties that have dominated the political process since Confederation. They used to be one party. They used to be called the Liberals-Conservatives. And then after 40 years, they split into two parties. They've rejoined four or five times in coalitions. But you would never know who's in power in terms of policy. It is just locked down. There's an inner clique of people that thoroughly dominate the federal government. And, yeah, we might as well not vote anymore.
Does Liberal and Conservative in Canada mean the same thing it does here? Is that backwards?
Generally, but these are capital. The parties are actually called the Liberal Party and the Conservative Party, capital L, capital C. one caters more to the social conservatives, but they're deathly afraid to go too far that way. And one, liberal, you know, liberal by ours, I mean, they are an absolutely corporatist party up the yin-yang, far more so than even the Democratic Party. They really want a thoroughgoing cartelization of the economy. They are it all gets tangled up with this whole French-English thing, but they're a highly authoritarian, elitist group of people who have an agenda for the whole country, and there's absolutely no getting rid of them. They have a lock on the eastern part of the country, and the western part of the country is absolutely marginalized and disenfranchised at this point.
Yeah, it gets back to what you said about how much it costs to be elected. I mean, you're millions and millions of dollars just for a state election.
Well, I mean, you look at you know where do people spend their money? You know, if there's a candidate you like, support that candidate. Work for them, support them financially, that kind of thing. There is a meaningful difference you can make, but most people say, well, everybody's corrupt. I'm not supporting anyone. Therefore, those things all happen without your say.
Yep.
I mean, that's the thing. You can't want to say but then not participate and expect it to turn out good. I mean, you're going to have to take...
I hear you. It's important not to get dismissive of democracy at all and to completely walk away from it. I noticed that in the last French election, there were record numbers. I can't remember the statistic. It was like 8-10%, something like that. People destroyed their ballot in the ballot. Like they walked right into the voting booth and destroyed their ballot in public.
Oh.
Maybe that's a way to go. And that was just before the yellow vest thing just about overthrew the government.
Well, you know what? That's a really good thing. They do, and the one thing that they added in Nevada that's a kind of along those lines, but actually makes a better statement. They added none of the above as one of the options, and you know, rather than not voting, if you hate both candidates or all five or whatever your thing is, to check the box none of the above and have none of the above be the top vote getter, that's a powerful statement.
That sends a message.
I wholly support that. I wholly support that. And really get the message out that, you know, the broader population, we're not being represented by these parties. We're being given kind of a false choice. You got a really weird choice in the States right now. You know, when Trump first got elected, I can say that I have never been so happy with an election result in my life than when Trump got elected in 2016, because I really viewed it as a triumph of the people over the elites. But he has lost my support. He's an incompetent, he's untrustworthy, he's a fraud. You know, he's lost my support. I would recommend
Sounds
America,
like you've been
if you
watching
got a
Chris,
decent third-party candidate, do it.
Sounds like you've been watching Chris What's-His-Face on no, not Chris Cuomo, the other one. The one this morning.
Chris Wallace.
Chris Wallace.
Yeah.
Totally sounds like that. Okay, we've got to take a really quick break on that unhappy note. We will be right back with our guest, William Kay. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
It's all going to pot, whether we like it or not. The best I can tell, the world's gone to hell, and they're all gonna miss a lot. All the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee, just couldn't hit the spot. Got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend. It's all going to pot. I got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, because it's all going to pot.
There you have it. It's a two-party system, and you can cry if you want to.
Playing me.
It's only fair. You know what's funny?
Yeah, sorry for the anti-Trump rant.
That's all right. You know, things happen. But, you know, one thing about it, you've got a guy who, you know, comes in out of the business world thinking, because, I mean, I'll give you an example. I'll give you an example. Our local congressman, you hear people all the time, right? If laws weren't so long and complicated, then they would be easier to follow. like the bureaucrats would follow them, or, you know, it wouldn't be such a big problem. But all these bills are, you know, hundreds and thousands of pages, and it's so complicated. That's what the problem is. Every bill should be short. Oh, okay. Well, here's one. The Army Corps of Engineers is no longer allowed to regulate ongoing farming practices. That's it. The end. Period. That's the whole thing. And it gets added to, you know, a big bill that's got a lot of other stuff in it. But this is an amendment that's one sentence long, passed, signed by the Obama administration, because I think it was in the NDAA. And meanwhile, they're still jacking up local farmers here in Northern California. So Congressman goes, meets with the Army Corps of Engineers, has a copy of his one sentence amendment that is now part of a law. It's a law. And says, hey, you can't bother this guy anymore. This thing's been a farm for 100 years. You can't ring him out anymore. It says right here. So he pushes that over to him, and they look at that, and he said, it says you can't regulate ongoing farming practices. He's an ongoing farming practice. Oh, well, that's not the way we read it. It's like, didn't see that coming. It's a different example, but that I think is how Trump saw the world. Like, you could go in and do something that is sensible, and then sensibleness would follow. And it's like, uh-oh, no. You're going to go in and be sensible and use things that work in the real world for, like, everything else. And you're going to take it into government, and it goes through the little sausage factory and comes out nonsense. And let's face it, I think we'd all get burned on that one hard.
Well, not to belabor the Trump bashing, but I recommend people, there was an interview with Rex Tillerson a while ago after he left, and mm-hmm. he said that, you know, other comments about Trump's work ethic aside, that Trump just really didn't understand the administrative machinery of government.
No, he didn't.
He was always ordering people to do things, and they couldn't constitutionally do it, or they couldn't legally do it. He was talking to the wrong bureaucrat, talking to the wrong cabinet minister. Trump has to own that. I really don't think that he still doesn't really get it. All these tweets and all this stuff, that's not what he has to do.
No, and I'll tell you the one thing that I don't know how it works in Canada, but I know here, the president has about 4,000 people when they take office that they can that are presidential appointees. They don't have to necessarily all be confirmed by the Senate, but they're people that the president can remove and replace. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's like 4,000 of them. That's a lot. Trump hardly removed a fraction of them. Now, Obama wiped them all out.
Bingo.
He hardly removed a fraction because, you know what? He was thinking, like normal people, that they were professionals and, like, in a company. If you take over as the CEO of a company, you don't fire everyone in the company and start it from scratch, for heaven's sakes.
No, you hope they carry out your wishes.
They're all professionals. You're now the new CEO. You come in. You run the company. They now, you know, basically work under your direction. And I think he wholly misunderstood how just really bad that whole thing is, you know?
Well, I got the sinking feeling with Trump. Now, kudos to him for, you know, getting out of the Paris Accord. But about a year or so into his administration, a coalition of 17 science bureaucracies financed by the federal government issued yet another one of these climate assessments. And there's another one of these over-the-top climate alarmists. Trump responds with a few tweets, sort of distancing himself from it. I thought, man, you're the boss, okay? You talk to your cabinet minister. Some of these bureaucracies could be just shut down completely, okay? The EPA should be shut down completely.
Yeah, the problem is doing that.
He had no prepared. What's that?
Doing that. I mean, it sounds good, and yeah, I'm not in disagreement with you. The thing is, look at even the minor changes that he makes. Oh my God, he's a fascist. He's an authoritarian. He's trying to be the king. And it's like,
he doesn't have to listen to that.
No, he doesn't.
He's no Ike Eisenhower. Ike Eisenhower was completely on top of the American government. You should read about his National Security Council. They called it marching up and down the mountain. Like, every day, people would march in, report. He would know exactly where to send them, what to do. Like, he was on the top of it. He was on the ball. That is simply not Donald Trump. Like, he had to purge a lot of these people, and he never did.
He didn't, and it just seemed like it would be less disruptive, which is a nice idea, and it seems really, emotionally generous and intellectually generous to say, hey, these people will do their jobs. Look at our intelligence community. And we've done tons of shows on that. And these guys were not consummate professionals. They were consummate partisans. And
there's a deep state and there's a broad state. And it just didn't seem to me that he ever really got the handle on this. I don't think he's ever going to. Anyway, let's stop bashing Trump. Let's get back.
I would be
say a few words about,
I'll put money on a second term that they all get wiped out. I'm going to say second term. They're all gone.
Pray for a meteorite. Yeah.
There you go.
One of the things I encountered this time around doing this research, you know, was the Ford Foundation. I actually sat there and read their 500-page 990 form.
Oh, God
and
bless
it's an
you.
Amazing read. And one of the things that I came across there was, you know, they are funding probably 100 documentaries a year. They are the size of a Hollywood studio. And a lot of those documentaries, you know, there's dozens that really foment black animosity towards police departments. And if people can get to the article, I give samples of four or five of them, but these are very polished, well-produced documentaries that are really designed to tug at the heartstrings of people. And when the Ford Foundation releases these, they have spent a couple of million dollars making them. They've got this array of nonprofit societies and black student unions that hold screenings of them. So these, not only do these documentaries frequently win Emmys, I came across one article and it just blew my mind how many Emmys the Ford Foundation has won, and they're never mentioned in the acceptance speeches. But they are those bankrollers behind just scores of these award-winning Emmys. Plus, they also bankroll four of the largest documentary film festivals in the United States. But they have their own network, you know, of hundreds of groups that hold showings in basements and university classrooms. After each time they release a documentary, they do that. They pass out the popcorn. After each showing of a documentary, there's a question and answer. Quite often they'll have the directors or producers travel the USA on Ford Foundation budget to promote their documentaries. They're training documentary film producers. But people really underestimate the power of documentaries. And Ford Foundation is putting them out in reams, and they've got this whole ground team that makes sure that as many students and young people of color see these as possible. And they're having a profound influence on American culture.
Well, they've also got the PBS in their hip pocket, you know, to promote all that as well.
Yeah, they are of an ilk. They actually give a lot of money to those groups. But I was really astonished by the scale of the Ford Foundation's documentary productions. They are spending $50-100 million a year on this. And you're going through the 990 form, and it's just one documentary film producer after another. And quite often they have to get top-ups, and then once they finish producing the film, they pay them travel around the country to promote them. But, you know, talk about profound cultural impact. Mm-hmm. That's all coming out of one organization.
Yeah, and that's an organization that has big-time recognition. People recognize the Ford Foundation, and gosh, if they...
They seem legit.
Yeah, they're legit. I mean, if they say it, that's got to be true.
I like that. Hmm.
We haven't seen anything like the Ford Foundation since these religious orders of the Middle Ages. They've completely flown the coop. Two-thirds of their assets are overseas now. They're estimated to be worth $13 billion.
Wow.
Oh, geez.
They're creating a full-service banking system in Africa. They're already pretty much tax-free, but, you know, they've got this bank in Cayman Islands that they own now. They've completely flown the coop. You know, they're not paying any taxes because they're a nonprofit society. They have vast assets. Not that the current Board of Trustees had anything to do with accumulating that wealth. This is still Henry Ford's money. And they just, because the law is you have to spend 5% of your assets every year. But they've hired professionals long ago, long before the current crop of trustees came in. They hired, top shelf professional investment advisors. And they've managed to get returns far and above 5% over this time. So they can hand out $400 or $500 billion. Last year they handed out $800 million. They're still not losing money. Their overall assets are still growing. So I don't see that organization ever coming to an end.
No.
They're autonomous.
No. Well, that's amazing.
And, they have assets all over the world now. And they're autonomous, and they're devious. And They are effectively now a black movement organization. Six of the 12 trustees are black. There's two or three other trustees that are non-black but have histories or CVs of just involvement in the black movement for decades. And they are pumping enormous amounts of money into what are basically sort of, black conscious or sort of black obsessed nonprofit societies. And they're generating all of these, black obsessed documentaries. They are really a divisive and negative force in the United States. If you really want to get away from racism once and for all, this isn't the way to do it.
No, this is just pounding the drum. I mean, it's, you're right.
It's some of it's kind of hard to explain in a way. You look at it and you think, how did we ever get here? You know?
This is how.
How did we ever let it go so far?
But behind the scenes, there's lots and lots of money passing hands.
Yeah, because these have all been financed. Well, look at the guys that are, like we were talking about. I'd like to, William, out some of the other people who are funding all this riot and revolution, because I think that the idea that the people that are throwing rocks that are kind of, not all of them, but the folks that are dropping off the pallets of bricks and that sort of thing, the idea that they're all being paid, I think is I think most people believe that, but you can't prove it. My guess is you can, and maybe before
you hit walls, right? I mean, these people they know what they're doing.
Well, right.
And they know the
hold that thought, though. I was giving you a minute and a half to mull that over, and then when we come back, though,
okay.
Let's talk about that before we hit the top of the hour, and then. Like we do have next week, so we're not going to panic too hard.
Cool.
All right, you're listening to We the People. Our guest is William Kay. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
This old man and me, we're at the bar and we're having us some beers and swapping night on cares. Talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks. Old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace and all the hell we raised. And then I heard the old man say, God is great, and beer is good, and people are crazy.
In the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. I done said the right thing, but it must have used the wrong line. I been on the right trail, but I must have used the wrong car. Hit us in a bad place, and I wonder what it's good for. I been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. My head is in a bad place, but it has a good time.
Dr. John never knew. He never anticipated 2020. It takes on a whole new look. So, seriously, these guys are being funded, right? I mean, they're being paid. They're not all living in their mother's basement.
Well, there's, like I say, there's probably 2,500 to 3,000 black activists in America. Now, they're working on health equity issues or criminal justice reform issues, and they are full-time employees. These people get a paycheck. They go to office every day. They, have endless meetings where they try to change this or that law, and they reach out to other people. They're full-time employees of that. Many of them harbor sympathies for the radical element. Many of them are secretly members of the radical element. The money is coming down in terms of which foundations are the big players. Ford, number one, the Casey Foundation, the Kellogg Foundation, and then there's a whole bunch of little ones like California Endowment and the California Wellness Foundation, the San Francisco Foundation, Ben and Jerry, all these ones that are contributing smaller amounts. But also BLM itself has sort of done a bit of an end around the big foundations and was appealing to the public through various internet sources. They attracted millions of dollars from some Korean boy band. And their fan army gave them millions of dollars. So once again, I see that tension with the new leadership in Black Lives Matter, like Patrice Kaluer's replacing Kaylee Skiles. I'm seeing Black Lives Matter getting money that the Ford Foundation didn't give them. And this is giving them elbow room to once again more directly finance the militant, more extremist elements. But there's this struggle going on there. Some key groups, so there's one called the Racial Equity and Philanthropy Fund, and it's got a, you know, the Ford Foundation and the Kellogg Foundation. There's one called Race and Equity in Philanthropy. And these are all initiatives by the philanthropic groups that are already giving a lot of money to the black movement, reaching out to further philanthropies.
What about,
probably, by my guess, right? What's that?
What about the entertainment industry, Hollywood? I mean, a lot of those folks are giving
tons of money.
Yeah, that's sort of, it's hard to get that information because they don't file Form 990 forms. So, yeah, they are. I'll tell you one thing that caught my attention was that one of the three women that came up with the phrase Black Lives Matter was Alicia Garza. And she really, all of them hit the jackpot now. They're all millionaires. They were definitely not millionaires 5 years ago, but they all are now. And one of her, Alicia Garza's new projects is a thing called Black Futures Lab. And in 2019, they did a direct outreach to 30,000 of America's most politically influential black people. She's got one of her own NGOs at the time called Black Futures Lab, and they are in direct contact with 30,000. That would be all the celebs, all the sports people. They are in direct contact with them.
Now,
they are mobilizing them.
Are they filing how much money they're taking in?
Black Futures Lab?
Yeah.
They're primarily funded by the Ford Foundation and that. So that outreach that they're doing is not so much to get cash directly for themselves as it is to sort of mobilize. And there's another group that I mentioned about that race and equity and philanthropy, same thing. They have got a database of 800 organizations that give money to the black movement.
Holy
so there's a high
Jesus.
Degree of centralization going on.
Mm.
But yeah, in terms of you know how much each individual celeb is giving, it's hard to tell. I know that the Black Lives Matter was attracting a lot of funding, but a lot of the big companies that said they were donating money to the Black Lives Matter were actually donating money to a parallel group called Movement for Black Lives, which the Ford Foundation set up with a $100 million endowment. And
good Lord.
A lot of the Bill Gates, they're giving money to that, but they are actually giving most of their money to the more conservative, like these groups like you know, the National Association for Colored People, what have you. So they're making it look like they're giving money to BLM, but they really don't want you because they're once again afraid about the liability. So that money is actually going to some of the more staid, larger groups like NAACP and you know, the Equal Justice Initiative and things like that. These are there's elements where there's NGOs within the black movement that have you know 50 employees, 100 employees, you know multi-million-dollar budget. But once again, these are not the groups that want to have anything to do with anything that's criminal.
What about?
I don't think you know without a forensic economist or sort of you know a real police department really kicking people's doors down, you're never going to find them admitting. Occasionally, you can see that they've given money to groups that are way out there, but for the most part, they know the ball game, right? They know they do not want to leave any paper trail
that
they're funding there.
Now, what about George Soros? You hear a lot about him. Does he leave?
You hear too much about him. Okay,
yeah.
Most of the people that are ragging on about George Soros are just these knee-jerk anti-Semites. George Soros' contribution to philanthropy in general in the United States is 1/300. He's not a huge player. The same thing with the Black Lives Movement. Yeah, he is giving millions of dollars, but I've checked it out. The money that he's giving is always to pooled funds. Like they're not doing anything original. He is just contributing money to organizations set up by the Ford Foundation or by Kellogg.
Okay.
There's nothing original about his contribution. He's writing paychecks to these people. I don't see a lot of initiative coming out of them. They're players, but yeah.
Well, except for the district attorneys, he's kind of secretly funding the flipping of some of these district attorney seats in big places like Philadelphia and that sort of thing. So that when these guys get arrested at these protests, they basically don't get prosecuted because the district attorneys aren't prosecuting them. I know he's put in a couple of
San
Francisco
is
another
true,
one.
But I guard against making too big a deal about Soros.
Yeah, like
people tend to exaggerate his influence. He's definitely a player, definitely a billionaire, definitely amongst that crowd. But if you go on the internet or go on the comment column, there's all these people, and you know who they are. These are the old sort of, you know, Jewish conspiracy theorist type, and they like to focus on George Soros. These people have never heard of the Ford Foundation. They've never heard of any other foundations that are contributing one heck of a lot more to this cause than Soros is. But they attach that because he sort of fits sort of a stereotype that they're trying to wedge out there. I've grown really weary of these people. Okay, they're profoundly exaggerating the influence of one individual. You know, a social movement is not a conspiracy. A conspiracy is a very small group of people engaged in clandestine discussions towards a clearly criminal activity. Social movements, much of what they do is legal. And much of what they do is wide open to the public to investigate. All of these foundations file Form 990 forms. You can go see where they spend every dollar. So this is not something happening in secret, and it's a movement. There isn't one person or even one clique of people. There are hundreds of organizations involved, and there's rivalries amongst them. So it's a far greater, you know, the conspiracy theorists like oversimplify social movement.
Right.
And that makes sense. I mean, it's a bad idea because it gets rid of, you know, it gives everybody else a free pass, I guess. And lets them just roll over everybody.
Describing the situation. He's a player. He's a villain, no doubt about it. But you know, you get the impression that somehow he's the eye on top of the pyramid. He's somehow controlling all of these things. When he's not. Bottom line, and it's obviously the people who are making such a big deal about him have got their own trippy baggage.
Yeah, they haven't done their homework.
Drag along.
Right. Right. Well, that's interesting.
I think a lot of people see George Soros as literally funding the whole thing. I hear that one a lot. It's all George Soros.
Yeah,
I'm like, well, come
nonsense.
On, guys. It can't ever be all
my
one guy.
He's funding less than 5% of the overall black movement, which is considerable. But it's, you know, it's probably, you know, less than, you know, 20% of what the Ford Foundation is giving, and nobody talks about them. You know, you get so big, you just get invisible, right? And that's where they're
at. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, it sounds like
the Ford Foundation will not be mentioned in any news broadcast without their advance authority, that's for sure. Have you ever heard a news broadcaster come out and talk about the Ford Foundation?
No, never.
No. No, they're all doing good work. They, you know, there's no news.
Actually,
there.
You don't hear about them at all.
Yeah,
you just
right.
don't hear anything.
No.
Jeez.
You get so big,
okay, so,
you disappear.
So we have like, 20 seconds, maybe? So you're listening to We the People.
Let's start again.
You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Got that out of the road. Our guest is William Kay. He's on next week. And we're going to talk about some more of this, yes?
It's the best station in America.
Oh, my
With
goodness.
With a Canadian on
Send
it.
Send that man to check.
Yeah.
See you next week.
Thanks, William.